Well, good morning, friends and brethren. So very good to see you this morning. Good to see a number of visitors with us. We are glad that you are here. Glad that you are with us. Good to see each of you this morning. Reverence God in worship. When we come together as God's people, it's important for us to realize that it is such a very special time. It's not just a time for us to socialize and to visit with brethren whom we love, but it's a time for us to focus on God in worship. And sometimes it could be easy for us to lose the focus of our real purpose in assembling together. Worship itself is a word that denotes reverence and awe. Awe is that idea of an overwhelming feeling or wonder that is produced by that which is grand and wonderful. And when we think about God and our worship to Him, it should strike us in awe when we consider Him. It was the psalmist who penned, "God is to be greatly feared in the assembly of the saints and to be held in reverence by those who are around Him." The 89th Psalm in verse 7. It's interesting to me that both fear and reverence are in this passage and similar in definition. To awe or to dread is the idea that comes from these words, to morally revere, someone said. The idea of fear is to be afraid of doing wrong and thus bringing down the wrath of God upon us. Fear in that regard. And the meaning of reverence is that God should be respected for His greatness and for His goodness to the children of men. Both of these words help us to highlight the greatness of His majesty and speaks of what our attitude toward God should be. It was the Hebrew writer who warned Christians to be careful to serve God acceptably. We're looking at Hebrews chapter 12. In Hebrews chapter 12, the latter part of the chapter, beginning at verse 28, a passage that reminds us that all earthly kingdoms will come to an end. And the writer says, Hebrews 12, verse 28, "Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming God." As we said, all earthly kingdoms will come to an end. And so as we think about worshiping God as Christians today, we are serving God in a kingdom which will not be destroyed by man. And with that in mind, we serve Him. And to do so acceptably, we have to serve Him with all reverence and fear, even as the psalmist said. There's another passage of like mind in the Psalms again. The 111th Psalm. Would you look with me? The 111th Psalm. And we begin reading here at verse 7. "The works of His hands are faithful and just. All His precepts are trustworthy. They are steadfast forever and ever, done in faithfulness and uprightness. He provided redemption for His people. He ordained His covenant forever, holy and awesome is His name." Some versions might say, "Holy and reverend is His name." We're not speaking about a title for God. It's a description. It's a description of God. You know, from the Hebrew, the word yar, I believe is how you say that, is fear, terrible, dreadful. It's the idea of trying to place before us the power, the magnificence of God. That is so great that we can do nothing more than to bow down before Him as we see and as we recognize His power and His position. His works, His precepts, redemption that comes through Him are all things to be honored. God is holy. God deserves to be respected. Holy and awesome is His name. You know, the word awesome has been tossed around a lot in recent years. Became quite popular for a while, maybe not quite as much now as it was. Everything was awesome. Man, that's an awesome new dress you got. Man, that's an awesome car you have. Everything was awesome. And truly, there are some things in life that are awesome. I mean, it's just so great and grand, it's almost beyond description. But it's interesting to me that that's a word that is used to describe God. And the more I've realized that, and the more I've thought about that, the less likely I am to use the word awesome for just something that's common. Because it makes me think about God. When we come together to worship, we need to remember who God is. No one has seen God, and yet the Bible gives us a glimpse of what it's like to be in the presence of God. Let's go to a passage that maybe is familiar. Exodus chapter 19. But it is this passage that helps me to see into picture in my mind what it would be, what it is to be in the presence of God, and to do so in such a way and with words that I can see it. I can see the picture in my mind. The scene or the setting here is Moses and the children of Israel as they stood in the presence of God. Moses had already been on the holy mountain. God's already been conversing with him. And God is giving to the children of Israel directions for life. In Exodus chapter 19, verse 3, it says, Then Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain and said, This is what you are to say to the house of Jacob and what you are to tell the people of Israel. You yourselves have seen what I did to Egypt, how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all nations you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you are to speak to the Israelites. This was the instruction of God. This is what he told Moses. Go back and tell my people these things. These were words of reminding. Remember how I brought you out of Egypt. You saw my power demonstrated. You have seen these things. It's a reminder to them that He is God Almighty. Awesome is who He is. And so Moses did just as God said. Moses went back and he called the people together, the elders of the people, and he spoke all the words that God had commanded them. And verse 8 says, The people all responded together, We will do everything that the Lord has said. So Moses brought their answer back to the Lord. Verse 9, The Lord said to Moses, I am going to come to you in a dense cloud so that the people will hear me speaking with you and will always put their trust in you. Then Moses told the Lord what the people had said. Here was God's plan. Moses was going to approach the Lord, and the Lord would be in the cloud on the mountain, and all the people would hear the words of God. They would have greater confidence in Moses this way, knowing that God had spoken to him these things, and they would hear these things. What an incredible scene is about to be set up. An event is about to take place that truly is beyond description. It's hard for us to even imagine these things as they are about to unfold. Verse 10. And the Lord said to Moses, Go to the people and consecrate them today and tomorrow. Have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day, because on that day the Lord will come down on Mount Sinai in the sight of all the people. Put limits for the people around the mountain and tell them, Be careful that you do not go up to the mountain or touch the foot of it. Whoever touches the mountain shall surely be put to death, and he shall surely be stoned or shot with arrows. Not a hand is to be laid on him. Whether a man or animal, he shall not be permitted to live. Only when the ram's horn sounds a long blast may they go up to the mountain. Verse 14. After Moses had gone down the mountain to the people, he consecrated them, and they washed their clothes. Then he said to the people, Prepare yourselves for the third day. Abstain from sexual relations. Now, can we get a picture of this? As the Lord was speaking to Moses, and that here is His plans for Moses to go and prepare the people, consecrate them, and have them get ready. This is 3 days' warning. In 3 days, I'm going to come before the people. And so this is what Moses told them to do. Here was the instructions, to prepare yourselves for this day, to be be consecrated, to be made pure. Purify yourself before you stand before God. Wash your clothes. And so I'm getting the impression that this is a significant day. That this is just a day beyond description. And that Israel knew something special was about to happen. Verse 16. On the morning of the third day, there was thunder and lightning with a thick cloud over the mountain and a very loud trumpet blast. Everyone in the camp trembled. Then Moses led the people out of the camp to meet with God. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. Mount Sinai was covered with smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. The smoke billowed up from it like smoke from a furnace. The whole mountain trembled violently. And the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder. Then Moses spoke, and the voice of God answered. Can you imagine being there? Can you imagine the sight and the sound? Can you even imagine God coming down on the mountain and the smoke rolling off the top of the mountain where it looks as though there's a furnace burning on top of the mountain, the smoke as it rolls off? No one questioned that they were in the presence of God. The conditions they see demonstrated the power and the spiritual presence of God. The mountain trembled. And they were there. Now that is awesome. That is truly awesome. And when they came to meet with God, they trembled. You know, when the prophet Ezekiel saw the Lord coming in a fiery whirlwind, you might remember, in the brightness of a rainbow with the noise of a great army, the text would describe, he fell on his face. And it is said in Ezekiel 1, there was an appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord, and when I saw it, I fell down, Ezekiel said. Yeah, I bet he did. It was an incredible scene. And the Apostle John, who saw that heavenly vision, the great throne scene, and John penned about that the 24 elders fell down before Him who sits on the throne and worship Him who lives forever and ever and cast their crowns before the throne. Revelation 4 and verse 10. That's awesome. To be there in the presence of God. These scenes are recorded for us so that we might show God the same kind of reverence and fear that His holiness and His majesty demand. When we come before God in worship, it should be no different for us as far as our attitude, what we are thinking about, and knowing and understanding that we are in the presence of God. We should tremble. Shouldn't we be so moved when we worship God as these were? These who knew that they were in fact in the presence of God, who stood in reverence and respect, Ezekiel who fell on his face before God. Israel had an appointed time to stand before God at the holy mountain. So do we. When we come together to worship God, it's with that kind of fear and reverence that we come before Him. There is a time to put off from our minds the interests and the activities of this life, to clear our minds of all of these things, to think and to focus on God. When you think about those standing before Mount Sinai on that day long ago, can you imagine anyone too concerned about the pot roast in the slow cooker at home? I mean, can you think about anybody that's too concerned about the race this afternoon, wondering who's going to win in Chicago this week? Or the ball game or whatever. Can you imagine anyone thinking about anything other than being in the presence of God at the foot of that holy mountain when God was there, His voice being heard by all? We need to be able to focus in that way. We have to prepare ourselves to approach the mountain, so to speak. Especially on the Lord's Day. What a special day we have every week that's given to us to assemble, to come before God and to worship Him, to wash our clothes, so to speak, and to get ready, to dress appropriately as we stand before God. A long time ago, when our girls were small, when they got old enough to be concerned about what they were wearing. And two girls, the arguments that went on about, no, I want to wear the blue skirt. Or no, I was going to wear that shirt today on Sunday morning. They was always scuffling around trying to get ready, you know, to leave for Bible class and worship. Well, it didn't take too long until we got kind of tired of all that arguing going on. And so we started something that Sandra and I still do. It was good for us as it was for the girls. Saturday night, as we went through, let's review our Bible lessons. Let's make sure everything is done. We're prepared. Our Bibles are set on the table so nobody's looking for the... You ever have Sunday morning, where's my Bible? We had that happen. But not often. It was on the countertop or it was on the table. It was ready to go Saturday night. And what was going to be worn on Sunday was picked out Saturday night. If something had to be washed or ironed or whatever, Saturday night, that was done. That was the rule. And so that worked really well. It worked well for Daddy, too. Somewhere along the line, as the girls were getting a little bit older, there was a Sunday morning that I was kind of hustling around the house, getting ready to go, and I hollered to Sandra, "Where's that blue shirt? I wanted to wear the blue shirt with this suit today." And the little voice in the back says, "Daddy, if you put your clothes out on Saturday night, you don't have to worry about it on Sunday morning. It's the Lord's Day." So it's all laid out on Saturday night, even now. Because on the Lord's Day, it's a special day. And Sunday morning is a time for us not to be concerned with such frivolous things as, is our clothes clean? The Israelites had 3 days to prepare. Wash your clothes, consecrate yourself, be purified, be ready for the coming of the day of the Lord. Can we learn something from this? And I know what happens in many houses because it's happened in ours too. Sunday morning comes and there's just a flurry of activity at the last minute when everyone's running around trying to find this and trying to find that. All we can do is manage to get everybody in the car and drive the church not yelling at each other. Just seems like a rough way to start off the Lord's Day. Preparation is what the Lord was trying to tell us. You know, our meeting with God is not a casual event. Our society has become so casual about everything, not just in dress, but in attitude. And it's an attitude that I see, it has permeated the Lord's church, and it can easily roll into how we view the Lord's Day and our preparation for the day, and even our worship. When I think about these passages we've looked at this morning, I'm not seeing a casual attitude here, are you? There was focus here. And what the day and what the event truly was about, it was about God. It was about reverence and honor to Him. It was a focus about Him. And sometimes we become so involved in issues of this life that when the time for worship comes, there's little excitement that is demonstrated. Little excitement in our opportunity. Here for us, I would like to think, you know, this is the big day of the week right here. And it has nothing to do with anything else than our time to assemble and worship God. That is the purpose of the big day of the week. Everything points to this day. Sometimes we have placed little emphasis in our life about being ready for the Lord's day. Not just picking out our clothes, but studying and making preparation for the day and for our classes. Preparation for worship, as in getting our mind focused for what we are doing. Thinking about spiritual things, planning for worship. Our focus should be on God. Our attitude about such things cannot be casual. Some things are just not casual. When we assemble together, we need to remember why God is worthy of our worship. To worship God is to show devotion to Him, reverence to Him. We show this reverence to God because the Bible tells us that He is worthy of such. We're going to the Psalms again. In the 29th Psalm, beginning at verse 1, the 29th Psalm, verse 1, ascribe to the Lord, O mighty ones, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due His name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of His holiness. Indeed, He is due our reverence and honor because He is God. Because He is God. Still in the Psalms, the 95th Psalm. In the 95th Psalm, and let's see, verse 6 beginning. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture, the flock under His care. Sounds like a song we sing sometimes. Now, this didn't come from the song. The song came from this. This incredible reminder that we come before the Lord. We reverence Him. We bow down before Him. Glory is due to God. We owe our very existence to Him. He is our Maker. He is the Creator of all things. And when we know God and who He is and what He has done, we understand He is worthy of our worship, and it makes us all the more want to worship Him. And when we come to understand this and embrace it, our attitude will change towards worship. Because God is worthy. Worship is something about which we cannot be casual. Worship must never become that which is just routine to us. When we worship, we need to remember our attitude before God. Our heart? Our heart needs to be right. Matthew chapter 15. Jesus is speaking to some who, well, they were worshiping God, so to speak. They were going through what necessary motions there would be. But Jesus could see right through that and saw a problem, saw something wrong with their worship. Matthew chapter 15 and verse 8, Jesus said to the Pharisees there, He had called them hypocrites. Well, did Isaiah prophesy about you? This people draws near to Me with their mouth, honors Me with their lips, but their heart is far from Me. And in vain they worship Me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Worship takes preparation. Not just getting our clothes out or being clean physically in those ways, but it's the setting of our mind. It's the setting of our heart. We expect those leading to worship to be prepared, don't we? I want to make a little comparison or contrast. We sometimes, if we don't have a public part to play in worship, our preparation might be different. But I want to say and emphasize that every one of us have preparation to make. Rick's been teaching our auditorium class here for a while. And it is very evident that Rick has worked hard to assemble material and to present some material for us in a way that's helpful. He's studied and he's thought about these things a lot. And it's evident. And we would expect that, wouldn't we? Of someone who's teaching a class or preaching or leading singing or any other public part of worship, we have an expectation that there's preparation that will take place. That doesn't excuse the rest of us. If we don't have a public part in the worship, a leading part, that doesn't excuse us from preparation, but still we have to have our attitude where it should be. Our heart has to be where it should be to worship God as He would want us to. Preparation starts ahead of time by making sure that our study is complete, to make sure our clothes are washed, you know, and that, what could I even say, to make sure that we're in bed at a reasonable hour. Do I really have to say that? I think I do. You know, that when Saturday night comes, that we're already thinking about the Lord's Day, and we're making preparations for that. I've heard it said, and I just cringe when I hear it, and when somebody says, well, I really, oh man, I was just so sleepy this morning. Sorry if I dozed off a little bit in the sermon, but you know, man, that ball game went a whole lot later than I expected it to last night, and I just want to say, really? I mean, no, I've not found any offense in this. I'm not offended at all. But what about the Lord? You don't have to apologize to me. You really don't. And everybody has that day where you didn't sleep well, where you're tired. I get that. Happens to me too. But when it is just a lack of preparation on our part, and we give no consideration at all to the coming of the Lord's Day, and we just run all weekend, and we just happen, oh hey, we gotta get ready to go to worship. We just happen to squeeze the Lord in a little bit on Sunday. I'm sorry. But I'm just not thinking that the Lord is real satisfied with that. I think about Mount Sinai. You know, I don't know everything that happened. There's no record of such a thing. But, I mean, was there anybody that ran up to Moses at the last minute, man, sorry I'm late, I overslept this morning. You know, as the mountain is trembling. I'm having a hard time seeing that. Are you? Or someone who came in dirty clothes because they were just so busy the day before that they forgot to prepare themselves for coming before the Lord. Moses, I'm really sorry. You don't have to apologize to Moses. It's about standing before the Lord and having our heart where it needs to be. Humility. You remember the parable that Jesus told, you know, the Pharisee and the tax collector. How proud the Pharisee was of himself. And the tax collector being the one who saw himself as not acceptable before God and prayed and pleaded to God to, you know, for mercy. He thought, you know, it's the idea of thinking less of self and more of God is the idea. You know, it's the lowly who bow down before God. And the idea of respect, you know, our respect must be evident toward the one who created all. Our respect toward God, I'm talking about, the one whom we worship. That there has to be respect there. You know, God told the prophet Isaiah that He looks kindly upon those who respect His word. Isaiah penned the words, "Has not my hand made all these things, and so they came into being," is what the Lord said. "This is the one that I esteem, he who is humble and contrite in heart and trembles at my word." Isaiah 66 and verse 2. We need to take God and His word seriously. Respect Him in every way. When Ezra read from the law, you remember in the book of Nehemiah, Ezra read from the law, and the assembled Jews all stood up during the reading of the law. Why did they do that? Because it took hours. For hours, this reading of the law went on. For days. Respect and honor. That's what it was about. And I think we get that. when we read a text is that we understand what was going on. We understand it was respect and honor for God and what He said. We understand that. You know, at a wedding, that the part that I'm always afraid to, that I'm going to forget, you know, when the bride comes in, all rise. Why do we do that? Respect. Honor that's being given. A few years ago back in Tennessee, for 3 months I had jury duty. Not every day. I got called every couple of weeks to go in. And there was this one day that I had to go in, or got there early in the morning at my prescribed time. And it was a cold morning in Tennessee, and it was spitting a little snow, and I was bundled up with a heavy coat, and I had a cowboy hat on. And I walked in the door of the courthouse, just walked in, I stomped my feet, shook myself off, and I looked up, and there was a lady bailiff standing right in front of me, kind of startled me. She says, "Take that hat off in this courthouse." I mean, I knew to do that. I just came in the door. But she was making a point. And there were several other in the lobby that saw that. And they got the point too. She was making a point. And it kind of set the precedence. And when we were in the courtroom, and about 30 minutes later, was that same lady bailiff that came out of that side door, and she stood and she says, "All rise." I was the first one up. Didn't have to tell me twice. Why do we do that? It's respect and honor for the proceedings that were about to take place. We understand respect and honor. But do we fully comprehend and apply that same thought when it comes to our worship? We need to learn to show the same kind of respect and honor, greater respect and honor, for what happens when we worship God. That's what I want us to think about. God can see our worship. In our conduct during worship, He sees it all. And He knows our heart. He knows what we are doing. Our behavior can't help but be noticed by others. It's noticed by God. It's noticed by others too. And most importantly, is our worship that which God would accept? Are we humble? Do we reverence Him? Do we see truly how awesome He is? And how we can even use this as teaching opportunities for others. When our children see us make preparation for the Lord's Day, it sets an example. It sets a pattern. I have learned from our children as they're grown and married now that I have no need on Saturday night to call and say, "You got your clothes laid out for Sunday?" I happen to know it's taken care of. And there's a pattern that is set. There's learning that takes place by things such as that. And when we worship, our children notice how serious we are about worship. If we sing, if we follow the Scriptures, if we pay attention, if we are reverent as we remember the Lord's death, they notice those things. Without us even having to say a word. It's always interesting to me when we have a visitor from the community and someone makes a comment like, "I've never quite seen a worship service like this. This was very respectful," I've heard someone say. And I'm thinking, well, yeah. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. How does God view our worship? Not just collectively, but each of us individually. Have you thought about that? As we approach God in worship, let's make sure our worship is all that it should be, and that we are truly His people in every way, that we are walking with Him and for Him always in this life, and He'll be there for us. As the lesson comes to a close, we're singing a song again that is to bring to our mind the idea of worship and bowing down before Him. Literally, have we done that? Have we submitted ourselves to Him? Have we humbled ourselves to Him? Have we accepted Jesus, His Son? Have we accepted the sacrifice of God that has been given to every one of us? Have we submitted to Him, even in baptism, for forgiveness of sins? As we think about our lives, if we look at our lives and see that we are deficient, if we're not what we should be, let's change. Let's be what we should be. If we're Christians, let's repent of our sins and pray forgiveness. If we are not a child of God, why won't you become one? A baptized believer in Jesus Christ, sins being washed away. It's the gift of God. If you need to respond, would you come as we stand and sing?